Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and I'm here with Tracy Scrabel of the North Carolina Coastal Federation and Leighton Bedzol, Shore Protection Coordinator for New Hanover County. We're talking about beach renourishment as one solution to coastal management issues. You can ask a question of our guests today by calling 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And Tracy, before we went to break, you had talked a little bit about the impacts of beach renourishment on the benthic community and on fisheries. Can you talk just a little bit about what it means for animals like turtles or birds who nest on the shore?
Sure. So we have a number of, again, birds lay their nest either on our ocean beaches or in the inlet areas, and these are very critical nesting areas for these species. And the inlets themselves, the fact that they are dynamic and migratory, they move around, shift constantly, is what many of these birds are after, including the piping plover, which is one of our endangered species that we have in this area. They feed on those same benthic communities that I was talking about. And so as we've increased from beach nourishment projects that used to be prior to, say, 1990, about 12 miles of shoreline to now close to half of all of our shorelines, the opportunity for these birds to move around and find unimpacted beaches to obtain those resources are dwindling. And so, again, we don't know what the cumulative effect of that is, but our numbers are down. And we need to pay attention to that as we're designing these beach nourishment projects. Monitoring has really been, I think we're just scratching the surface, because the need for these beach nourishment projects and the numbers of them have really outpaced our research.
And at this point, who is responsible for monitoring these populations? Leighton Bedzol.
The monitoring falls to the permittee.
And in some of these cases, that would be the town, or would it be New Hanover County?
It would be whoever the permit is issued to, whoever that responsibility falls to.
Now we also have researchers. We are very, very fortunate in North Carolina because we are blessed with a number of research universities. And so we are provided with great data. But again, the data is the research has not quite kept up yet with the demand and the numbers of projects. So as research comes out, it provides us with great possibilities for adaptive management.
Is there an argument to be made? I've heard some people say with beach renourishment comes a healthier, wider beach. So there's more nesting area for some of these animals. It's actually better for turtles. And aren't these projects taking place not during the nesting season to deliberately avoid any sort of detrimental impact on the population? Leighton Bedzol.
Yes, they absolutely should be occurring within the approved window, which is November to April.
And that's when the birds are not nesting, the turtles are not nesting.
That's when biological activity is less. And we should strive to do these projects during those periods. There's no question about that. I want to go back to the research aspect of it and pros and cons on the effects. In 2013, most folks realize that turtle nesting is cyclic. One year it's up, one year it's down. In 2013, we had a real, real strong turtle nesting season, and I give so much credit to the volunteers up and down the coast that spend a lot of hours making sure these turtles are protected. A lot of kudos should go out to those folks. But the interesting thing is, that previous winter, 2012-2013, Baldhead, Curry Beach, Carolina Beach, parts of Figure Eight, and parts of Bug Banks all received sand that previous winter. And then the next nesting season, it was a bumper crop, so to speak. Now, I'm not saying that we're having increased nests because of the projects. But it's fair to say that if the sand wasn't there, there would be less viable nesting.
So you think that you can draw a link between a previous beach renourishment project and then a bumper crop?
I think I can draw a link that if we have highly compatible material, the effects are lessened dramatically, both on benthics and birds and turtles.
And Tracy Scrabel, you're smiling.
Yes, I am smiling. He's absolutely right, and I've seen research that points to effective beach nourishment projects having positive effects on sea turtle nesting. Unfortunately, more often than not, we are not staying within those windows of opportunities that we know will protect those resources.
Well, you mean during the winter when there's less biological activity going on, we're not doing the renourishment activities then?
We are often seeing extensions being granted. When push comes to shove and you've got a dredge on site, and this used to be part of my job, you have a lot of financial reasons and you're under a great deal of pressure to finish the project. There's going to be, more often than not, extensions granted well into these sea turtle nesting seasons. And those affect all of the resources that we're talking about. Once you start getting into our productive periods, then you're going to start to see that cumulative effect that I was talking about.
Why would extensions be granted in the first place? Is that availability of dredges? Does the job take longer? Why do extensions happen, Leighton Betzel?
I thought you were saying.
Well, we both know the answer.
Well, there is a lot of financial pressure on these projects. But I concur with Tracy in that we should be building these projects within the winter window. Now, we have several things that aren't playing in our favor. One is the scheduling and the cycling of federal funding and having those projects ready to go on the street the day the window opens. Federal budgets don't come out till October 1st. It's a hard thing to put together between then and November 15th, the project can get it on the street. I've been working hard, and several of us have been working hard, to try and modify that scheduling of funds so that the Corps has the time to put that project out on the street as early as possible so that the entire window could be made available to the contractor. And if I may, there is, I won't say limited, but there is a somewhat restricted dredge fleet in the United States.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about how to manage our beaches to preserve critical assets, infrastructure, property, while working within responsible environmental parameters. In the studio to answer your questions, Leighton Betzel, Shore Protection Coordinator for New Hanover County, and Tracy Scrabel, Coastal Scientist with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And I want to get to this email. He writes, instead of spending millions of dollars every 3 or 4 years to pump poor quality sand onto Wrightsville Beach, we should experiment with near-shore submerged artificial reefs. This has been successful in the Caribbean, where reefs have been built, where natural coral reefs are lacking, and the result has not only halted erosion, but actually resulted in beach accretion. The North Carolina Division of Marine Fisheries already has an offshore artificial reef program aimed at supporting fish populations. Why not experiment near shore? It could be done on the beach at Lee Island or Masonboro Island in a small section where it could be studied for expansion. My guess is, if done correctly, surf fishing would be extraordinary. Surfers would love it, and our beaches would stabilize, all resulting from a one-time cost to taxpayers. A talented grant writer could probably secure federal funds for the experiment. Well, it sounds like a mini plan there in an email. Leighton Betzel, is that even remotely within the realm of practical reality?
I hate to rule out any alternative or any option. We need to keep an open mind. I think the emailer may have answered his own question, though, where they're trying, based on his comment, where they're trying this, it's where they have reefs near shore. That's not our habitat here. We have hard bottoms, and we have live hard bottoms, but it's a different geology. It's a different structure. It might, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Tracy Scrable, do you have a comment on that?
Well, just again, as a coastal geologist, I would echo what Leighton said. Number one, it is not what you see in our geology. But number two, for better or worse, North Carolina has among the most high-energy shorelines of any on the Atlantic coast. And if anybody has been here during a typical northeast storm, much less a hurricane, you realize that when you have an 8-10-foot surge on top of some pretty severe energy waves, you're talking about energy that's well up over where those reefs would be. And I don't believe those reefs would be successful in dissipating the energy that we're talking about. And certainly we would never have the resources to keep those reefs in place versus looking at other strategies. So it's a, you know, we're all about experimentation, but I just think about the energy contained in these waves and storms and what kind of dissipation you would need from those reefs to even make a difference at the house lines.
Leighton Betzel.
I might challenge the emailer's description of the material that was put on Risal Beach in 2014. I would not qualify that as low quality material.
And this is an issue that you raised a little earlier in the conversation, Leighton, talking about material compatibility. And this is an issue that's come up before. Tracy Scrable, you brought some props with you in your bag. You have a couple of giant rocks.
I do. And let me just set the stage by saying we know for projects to be successful and to have minimal impacts on our biological community that what's most critical is that beach sand be compatible with what's already there. We also know that we have sediment-starved coastlines, particularly in the southeast portion. We have a thin veneer of sand over fairly hard bottoms on our continental shelf and intercontinental shelf here. So it is always going to be a challenge to find quality sand. Beaches or projects that take sands out of inlets are often getting finer materials than what exists on the beaches, and that has a negative effect on that benthic community that I talked about and those that forage on that community.
Why does that matter?
The compatibility issue?
Yeah. I mean, why – if the sand is finer in the inlet and it's brought over to the beach side.
All right. So let's just take these critters themselves. If the sand is too fine for that environment, it can smother those animals. Right? So they need – they are well adapted for a particular environment. Sand is too coarse, those animals that need to get in there and burrow down and also animals that need to forage on the benthic community is going to have a difficult time finding them. They are very sensitive to this type of parameter. And so, unfortunately, it is very challenging. I empathize with Leighton and others. We're always going to have to really struggle to find good beach quality sand in the quantities that we're going to need moving in the future. What I brought is a perfect example of how things go awry in a hurry, and that is from the North Topsail Project. I take no pleasure in talking about it, but it's very relevant. Despite the efforts of the consultants to identify compatible sand, we're talking about over 3 miles of shoreline where rocks you know, from small rocks up to basketball size have been pumped onto that beach continuously for weeks and weeks and weeks and down to 4 feet in depth. And obviously that is going to have dramatic effects on nesting turtles, on humans, on the tourism industry. And again, I take no pleasure in talking about this, but it's happening as we speak.
And what? How does something like that occur? Leighton Bedsall, when a beach renourishment project is getting underway, how does the project manager find compatible sand? What does that process look like?
Well, it starts with a lot of money. And you have to go out and you do several testing techniques, whether they be vibrocore borings, whether they be side scan sonar, whether they be sub-bottom profiling. You go search, and then you sample, and then you compare. North Carolina has fairly stringent sediment compatibility rules, and I think they were developed with the species in mind. And for the most part, I feel like they are working. Now, there is the situation that Tracy refers to is a shame. It's a shame, and I think everyone would change it if they could.
And what are they doing about it? What can they do about it?
Pick up rocks.
Well, several things are happening. In our opinion, what should have happened immediately is the project should have been stopped. For all of those reasons that we've talked about, the contractor wanting to continue working because he's getting paid, and he's doing exactly – he's working in the location that they told him to work. And you've got a town who's under a deadline. Now, they will need an extension from those windows that we talked about. But you have a lot of financial incentive and pressure to get this project done. That should not affect the state and federal agencies whose responsibility is to ensure that those very good compatibility standards are met. And in no way was that done. And yesterday, I believe there was a meeting of the federal resource agencies, including U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who have strongly spoken out that this is going to have adverse impacts on our sea turtles. And I believe they are meeting today. They have been on site for the last few days, I believe, looking at ways to put the screens back on. My point is, I used to be a monitor on these dredges. You know when you are pumping rocks. There is no question but that you're pumping rocks.
You can hear it?
Oh, you can hear it. You can hear it when you're on the end, on the dredge end, and you can certainly see it and hear it. And these projects are to be closely monitored. So, you know, the question is, for all accounts, it would be better to stop and figure out what the problem is, and certainly not to continue it, because now it is – there are no winners here. The town is going to have to incur a great deal of expense to try to pick up those rocks down to 4 feet. Mm-hmm. You know, remember that a turtle's nest goes down to 4 feet, almost 4 feet. So they need to be able to dig down to 4 feet.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about how to manage our beaches to preserve critical assets and work within responsible environmental parameters. We have Leighton Bedsall, Shore Protection Coordinator for New Hanover County, and Tracy Scrable, a coastal scientist with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. And Tracy, one of your colleagues wrote in, Mike Giles sent this email. How will New Hanover County address sea level rise predictions? I guess this is directed at you, Leighton Bedsall, for Wilmington between 2.4 at a low and 9.3 inches as a high in the next 30 years as far as sustainability of our coast and beaches. And will the county be looking at the cost of beach renourishment as sea level rises and in planning for that impact? Which is a great question, because as we know, the Coastal Resources Commission has put out the updated sea level rise report, which is now looking at the next 30 years instead of a much longer window. So, Leighton Bedsall, how is the county planning for that? And I imagine we'll get you started on this answer and we'll have to take a break and come back and finish your answer.
Well, we actually discussed it just a bit earlier, is through this shoreline mapping program, we will be able to pick up that trend probably before most folks will, because we'll have hard science, hard math to calculate, to show how that 5 foot elevation or that 1.4 elevation moving landward or moving seaward.
You're listening to Coastline. New Hanover County's Leighton Bedzole is here. He's the Shore Protection Coordinator, as well as Tracy Scrable with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. You can ask a question by calling 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org.